Welcome to the Stabcast, a podcast dedicated to Star Wars Legion.
We've analyzed their attack, sir, and there is a danger. Should I have your ship standing by?
Evacuate? In our moment of triumph? I think you overestimate their chances.
Rebel base, 3 minutes and closing.
Welcome, cadets and commanders, to Stabcast, the Sunsphere Tactical Attack Brigade Star Wars Legion podcast. I'm Ben, Minock Eye Fowler, with Ryan, Captain Rebel Slowoski, and Tim, Scarlet Sith Hannon. Welcome, gentlemen. How are y'all doing today?
Doing good. How you doing?
Can't complain.
This week on Stabcast, battle reports, our academy thingy, tanks and jalopies, and much more.
So, as always, we want to start the show off with some bat reps. This week, we had the extreme pleasure of going down to Gigabits Cafe in Atlanta, a couple hours south of us, to play in one of their first events that they put on. 14 players showed up from, I believe, at least 3 different states, maybe more. Us from Tennessee, we had some guys from South Carolina, and then obviously some Georgia locals. It was a pretty good showing. We also met up with a good friend of the show from Dan Wolf Games, who supplied, I want to say, three or four tables worth of terrain.
I think it was 4, yeah.
Yeah, with a new project he's starting called War Worlds, which you guys can find on Facebook or through us. He didn't stream, but he recorded most of the day, and it was kind of a test run for some of his recording equipment. And I do have to give us a quick plug. I did get to get the VOD and then commentate on the final table, and that should be up online by the time this podcast airs. But it was a really fun day. 14 players, 3 rounds of Legion, and then they made the poor souls that made the final table had to play a 4th round. But it was a long day, it was a good day, and it was a lot of fun. Everybody was out there just to have a good time. It was a real fun, cool, chill atmosphere. No pressure, and it was a good time to meet a lot of new players. I know I went down, Tim went down, Brett rode with me, our friend from the Knoxville community, Scott, came down.
So many Knoxville people. Really, pretty much almost everybody.
Almost. You would think it was almost everybody, but...
You would.
There was that one guy that was missing that sometimes comes out to Legion events, but it's usually not very often. Mm. Well, what's that guy's name, Tim?
I think his name is Betrayal? Maybe Mr. Hurt. That's what it is. Mr. Hurt.
I'm pretty sure I introduced myself at the beginning of this as Ben the Minock Eye Fowler. So,
because all you do is watch. You don't play this game.
All I do is watch these games. I watch lots of games. They're really cool.
So right. This is the part of the show where Ben is going to bring up some excuse on why he didn't come, even though I went down the night before and got a hotel room and offered to let Ben stay with me.
I also did the same thing.
Yeah. So Ben, what's your excuse for not coming with us?
So this is only for the listeners in the audience. I'm trying to see how long I can not play the game before they kick me off.
It's coming, folks. It's coming.
Annihilation looms, Ben. Annihilation looms.
So like Ryan said, the plan was to go down there. Ryan had to go a little bit earlier because of his schedule. Tim drove down earlier, but I'd had a pretty long week. State testing's in effect and have lots of stuff going on. And I was like, you know what? I'll sleep. I'll get a nice restful night of sleep. It's late enough in the morning I can get down there by waking up at my normal weekday time. It'll be fine. So I woke up. I felt good. The birds were chirping and the sun was high. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. And I woke up at 9 o'clock. So yeah, I can't make Atlanta in 2 hours. So I just, you know. Just slept right through it.
So,
had a nice day. Weather's beautiful. Like I said, super nice here.
So let it be known, dear listeners, which 2 of the 3 Stabcast hosts actually care about you to play the game, to bring you our, in air quotes, expertise.
That's very big.
Listen,
air quotes.
John Madden has not played a game of football in 45 years, but he can still comment on them, and it's still glorious.
Does he still commentate? I don't know. Is he still around?
I don't think so. They recorded his voice for all those video games. I'm assuming.
That's fair.
What is this, Futurama?
His consciousness lives in a robot, or...
Yeah. Is his head just floating in a jar already? We just don't know about it?
Yes, exactly.
Ryan, what about the games you got to play?
So I got to play 3 really awesome games. I had a lot of fun at all 3 tables. But I want to talk about something that I you know, don't like to talk about a lot on the air. I'm going to talk about a game... that I lost.
Gasp.
I'm Oh my.
So I went.
Brace yourself. Listeners.
I went
brace
2-1 on the day. I had a lot of fun. I had a really tense first game where if we got to go to turn 5, I thought my opponent had me. And so we played turn 4 really quickly. And like we flipped command cards and like started our first order when time got called. So we got to play it out, but we played key positions and Luke's force push came in and saved the day on me. So it was a super tight game that kind of ran through most of our lunch break. And so I had a quick turnaround when everybody else was kind of rested and refreshed for game 2. And I got to play an old friend, Jordan Stuckenschneider, who I've known for a bit from playing X-Wing. I traveled around before Legion came out and played quite a bit of X-Wing. And so it was good for us to, you know, kind of catch up and chit-chat and have some common ground. And he played a really interesting list that was Boba with Krennic in E-Web, two Stormtrooper DLTs, a Sniper team, and a Death Trooper squad. Yeah, there were Snows with Flamers and just a regular Snow squad. It was kind of an interesting list. I decided, on the other hand, that I had kind of, this was my first tournament outside of our local stuff, I want to say, since High Command. So I wasn't playing anything too try-hardy. I'd been practicing Luke and Leia and Chewie a lot and wanted to kind of go back and just play a bunch of stuff that I haven't played in a while. So I took Luke, Chewbacca, and 2 AT-RTs, and then cores to fill with no snipers. I'd seen a lot of discussion on the Atlanta Facebook page and to some extent the Legion page in general about how snipers are everywhere and they are the only defining characteristic of the meta. So I wanted to not play with them at all. And I ran 1 Flamer AT-RT, 1 Rotary Cannon AT-RT, 2 Repair Bots, a set of Fleet Troopers, Luke and Chewie, mainly just to play Common Cause because I think that card is so much fun. I also got to play Pinned Down, which did quite a bit of work on the day. But me and Jordan ended up playing key position, major offensive, and I was the blue player, and I don't put this in my deck normally, but we played Clear Conditions. Running
gasp.
Yeah, I know.
We just had a podcast about this, Ryan.
How many times do we have to boo it?
I know, but I was playing double walkers, and I didn't want Minefield in my battle deck. I think it's too dangerous for playing because it has impact, surge to crit and impact 1.
I'll give you that, Ryan. I mean, having played AT-RTs on a map with Minefield, it blew up my AT-RTs long before my opponent could.
Yeah.
I get that.
So I took it out, and Clear Conditions was in the third column, and so he just kind of pushed for it. And it was fine. We played this really cool table, and if you actually go and watch the VOD of the final table, it was the same table that we got to play on. It was the Cityscape with a lot of hardcover and a lot of line-of-sight blockers. Quite a bit of terrain, but several main kind of shooting alleyways. And turn 1, with Major Offensive, we start pretty close to each other. And with us playing key positions, I honestly think I got the better end of the key positions. But in moving up the first turn, I was trying to play fast and kind of play casual. And we were chit-chatting about what X-Wing 2.0 is like and what we've been doing since I kind of got out of the game. And why I really like Legion over X-Wing and why Jordan really likes X-Wing over Legion. We were having a good discussion. And when I moved my Luke turn 1, his order token came up a little too soon. I kind of had to put him in this spot where he was sitting next to my Fleet Troopers who were concealed behind a building, but because their bases were there, it kind of left Luke hanging out a little bit. And so a ton of Jordan's army could shoot at Luke even though he had heavy cover.
Sucking that gut, son.
Yeah. Luckily, Chewbacca was nearby, but by the end of turn 1, Luke had taken, I want to say, 3 damage, and Chewie had taken like 4 or 5.
Ooh, gross.
Now, that being said, the rest of my army was fine. And so I come to push down this middle row, I get my Flamer AT-RT in a beautiful spot, and it does like nothing. My Rotary Cannon AT-RT runs and charges his snipers, because that was its job on the day. Everybody asked me why I wasn't running snipers and what my answer to opposing snipers were. And it's the AT-RT's surge to crit. I don't care about your cover. If I get to roll 5 black dice with an aim token and surge to crit, I can get 2 crits through. And it ended up getting his snipers down. and running this really nice flank around his rear. But he put everything firing down this alley where I kind of wanted to keep him, because this alley wasn't in a great spot for him to get to the middle key position. So I wanted to force the fight there, and hopefully by the time the game started to wrap up, I was intending to lose the fight, but he wouldn't hopefully have enough time to get his guys to my two key positions to take the day on. But then I made some mistakes, and I like that I can point back to some mistakes. Now, I made a handful of mistakes. One, leaving Luke out a little too much on turn one, but then also on the last turn, some stormtroopers got a pot shot off on Luke and put him over his damage threshold, and I had to pop emergency stims. And that lost me the game.
Oof.
Because that allowed Boba to come in and collect his bounty, which is huge on key positions.
Yeah. Oh,
and if I would have let Luke die, he couldn't have done it. The other thing, and why I thought I was safe, is he needed to win the game. The very last thing that happened on the game was I have two of the positions. He has a bounty, and I've got one unit on one of the on the central key position. He runs three snowtroopers around. Let me back up. My AT-RT shoots his snowtroopers at point blank range, and gets four hits. He's got three guys left in the unit. He rolls four blocks. I was a little upset. He brings his snows around because they had an officer, so the suppression that they gained didn't bother them. They come around with an aim token and shoot at my unit leader, a one rebel trooper, and a repair bot that were holding the key position with a dodge token, with a suppression token. So I was feeling pretty safe. He rolls blank, blank, crit, spends his aim token, rolls into crit, crit, and I blank my dice and lose the game.
Oh.
It was so exciting, so back and forth. I took the fight that I knew I was going to lose, that I thought would buy me enough time, messed up with my Luke twice, once with his positioning and once with emergency stims, and then bought the time I needed, but Boba Fett was managed to come in the end, catch his bounty, and then his snowtroopers threw the miracle triple crit into my triple blanks to win the game, and it was so much fun. We were talking about the game afterwards on one of the things that I think Legion offers over X-Wing, and when you kind of get behind in those impossible situations, even though things were looking really good for me to end up winning the game, the dice just came up, and until the very last throw, we didn't know what was going to happen. And it was a really fun game. And even though I took the L, it was probably my most fun game of the day. It was just a good opponent. Jordan was a good guy to hang out with and spend a couple hours throwing dice at.
I do love the cinematics that this game can sometimes offer.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. Well, that's speaking of cinematics, I've got another one for you there. So I've actually gotten a chance to play a whole lot of Legion since our last show, between TTS and then in real life stuff. So I got a lot of games to choose from, but I think we're going to also talk about Atlanta. I played first round. My opponent was a man named Patrick, really nice guy from Columbia, South Carolina, came with a whole crew, with Adam who won it and Adam's wife, just a whole cool group of folks. And we had a super close game that ended pretty cinematically. Patrick had Krennic, Death Troopers with a DLT, an E-Web, two Storms with DLTs, a Storm Medbot, Snows with Flames and Frags, a Sniper Team, and Boba. I had a similar list, a little bit. I had Krennic, two DLT Death Troopers, only one of them had Overwatch because of points. An E-Web that had HQ Uplink and Suppressive Generator, which I don't normally run my E-Webs with anything on them, so that was a little different for me. A Sniper Team, another Flame and Frag squad just like he had, and three DLT Storms, as well as a Naked Storm. I'm pretty sure on those lists, I didn't record them at the time like I meant to, so if I got anything wrong on yours, Mr. Patrick, if you're listening, I apologize. But as far as I remember, that's what it was.
I'll be honest with you, Tim, I like the list. Yeah. I really do.
With some tweaking, I think I like it too, but we'll get there. I need to get more used to playing Death Troopers, but we'll get there. We play Major Offensive, Recover the Supplies, and I know I just made a joke about it before, clear conditions.
Tim, we just had a podcast about this.
We were just talking about it 10 minutes ago, so it was great. Well, that's all part of the reason why I gave you a hard time about it.
Ben, you don't get to condemn people from the balcony. Stop it.
All your conditions are clear because you're in the room.
Yeah, but you're not even playing any conditions.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I've been watching other people play. I say boo. I've watched people play with limited visibility, but they played it as clear conditions.
That's too soon. But anyway. So that was our game type. It was a really cool map, little kind of desert Tatooine-y kind of map. It went back and forth a little bit, and the midpoint or box in the middle was definitely the fighting point, as happens. And it got really, really tense for a little while there. Again, really back and forth. Both E-webs remarkably did an amazing job being E-webs. there was a corridor where the box was that we both needed to claim really badly. And neither one of us wanted to go there because the other's E-Web was looking at each other. And we traded a couple E-Web shots. I ended up killing his E-Web, which then let my guys move forward. But even then, by the time I had done that, his other guys had moved up. So again, it was definitely a testament to E-Webs doing their job and doing E-Web things, which was a lot of fun as well. My E-Web got to sit on Overwatch and guard that box until my guys could get there. I killed Boba really quick because being that it was recover and the way it was working out, I wanted to get him off the board and didn't have to worry about bounty. I got a couple of good shots in there, got him gone really quick. So we got that off the field. And then I realized he taught me with his one Death Trooper squad. I think it was just one. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he just had one. With his one Death Trooper squad, he taught me how to be a better Death Trooper because my two Death Troopers died. He taught me just how large range 4 can be.
Yep.
And I did not realize during setup, and this is a turn 0 mistake, I during setup put my guys just behind cover, and in the sense of it was behind cover from the front, but I didn't think about from the side, and his Death Troopers had a clear shot on my guys from the side arc, and so they shot in, and they rolled good. We were both, honestly, for the whole game, we were both rolling really fiery attack dice, and he was rolling some killer defense dice that we both remarked that neither one of us have ever seen defense dice do that before. However, I was not. I'm not going to blame it all on the dice because I put them in the bad spot. That's on me. But it doesn't help when all you need is paint and all you get is blanks. Yeah. So just rolling blanks. Both Death Trooper squads ended up melting. Flame and Frag squad, he was able to sneak them around. He was definitely making some really key plays, and I would argue that he probably outplayed me, especially just using cover better than I did, and his med bot was really coming in clutch, healing dudes left and right. It was good. So, yet I won. How did this happen? Because nice. I finally decided, okay, you know what? We're getting close to the end. We're getting really close. Time was coming up on us. We're around 5 or something like that. And I just book it with one of my DLT squads into the center objective, grab the box. They're getting shot at left and right. You got guys on his left, guys on his right, shooting at him, trying to whittle him down. He's dodging. I'm losing guys left and right. And all it comes down to, all that is left is the unit leader. It's just the squad leader. That's it. But he's got the game-winning box because if we go to points, because he's wiped out my two Death Troopers, we go to points, he wins. So I'm like, I have to win this. So I take the box and I run, just run while he's getting shot at, and through making sure you always look at your cover, I'm making sure I looked at that cover. I made it so he couldn't see him with his one sniper squad, because if he had been able to see him with a sniper squad, it would have been game. He would have pierced it. He would have been dead. But so it all came down to not just one turn. It came down to one action, pretty much of one turn. And fortunately, his snipers were suppressed, so they couldn't move anyway. But even if they could, we moved him to see if they could make it, and just to see if they could have gotten a shot, and they couldn't. But it was barely. We had, I think, the TO and other people coming in and looking like, hey, can he make it? Does he make the shot? This is the game.
That's awesome.
And didn't make it. But yeah, it was a great game. My heart rate literally spiked to 160. At one point I had my heart monitor going on, my Apple Watch going on. Monitor. I was like, I wonder what's going on right now. And yeah, it was nuts, and it went beyond time because we really wanted to play it out, and so we were able to get our our, I almost said dials down, X-Wing style here. We got our cards down and everything in time for our last round. So we were able to play out of the last round, see how that goes. But
that's awesome.
It was, whew, it was close.
Sometimes you get that Battle of Normandy Beach kind of battle where the one guy has to make it up the field, and if he can do it, it's glorious. But yes, then, you know, the other guys are dropping like flies. Yes. Every corner is just dead bodies, yes, everywhere. And
well, and it again, because he was just wiping out my units and just really just killing everybody, I kind of had resigned myself mentally. I was like, all right, you know, I probably lost this one. All right, that's fine. I'm used to it. I'm used to losing. It's how it goes. Whatever. Oh, well, first time trying double death troopers. I will get used to it. It's fine. I'm still kind of patting myself on the back, but it's okay, bud. And then I realized something. I was like, oh my gosh. If I got a chance. It's a chance in hell, but I got it. And so he's running. So he ran. He ran through the fire and flames, and he got it. But it was close.
A miracle mile.
Yeah, it was a miracle mile. And yeah, great game. Absolutely great game. And definitely well played. Beautiful. Beautiful game.
That's what it feels like to play Rebels all the time, where you just kind of throw a bunch of dice, clench and pray, and sometimes you just win.
I think I'd literally die. Like, that's not an exaggeration. I think my heart would explode. Like, it's awful. Yeah.
Well, I, as we've already discussed, have not played any games since then. But I did get to co-cast with Stabcast Tim and Codec on a tabletop simulator Invader League game. It was the arch nemesis of the podcast versus Darth Pinto.
Oh, Joe. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was the list that Tim and I had been wanting to see. It was Imperial Sabs with Krennic with all the heels versus Rebel Sabs with Luke, Leia, and Sabine. Now, the archenemy was playing the Rebel side. We wanted to see these bombs. Show us how bombs work. We've been talking about it. Here locally in Knoxville, we don't play it very often. I think most of us never thought to buy enough components to do it.
Nope.
But we wanted to see it. So, as the archenemy is the archenemy of the podcast, Tim and I are against him. Codec feels a little bad for him, so he feels like he has to root for the archenemy. Turn one, Tim and Codec are wondering what the archenemy of the podcast is going to play. Sabine's explosion card on round one, because she can leap out there, throw some bombs, set them off, damage some things, because that's what you do with saboteurs.
Right, right.
Or Leia's No Time for Sorrows. Run up there, throw some bombs out, get them off real quick, save that one guy so you can set them off. And if you're struggling yourself with how to play this list, you should really check out SWLegionOdds.com. It's Orchimedes' blog. It's really good. Talking about the article is called Sabotaging the Meta, and it is written by Daniel Lupo. It's a great article about what to do with it, yep, how to play it out, what's the key components of it. Great article. And so Tim and Codec and our followers who are watching us on Twitch are like, he's got to play one of those two, right?
Nope.
No, of course not.
No, it's Brett.
I'm the only one. The man who hasn't played this game in 4 weeks. I call out that the archenemy is going to do none of those things, but instead he's going to play coordinated bombardment.
With limited visibility in play.
With limited visibility in play. Lord. They tell me I'm crazy. The internet says, you're crazy, Ben. Codec, a man from Massachusetts who knows how to use certain choice words better than us pleasant, gentle Southerners, was like, no way. There's no way this happens. They're playing on the tabletop simulator map Corellia, which is very difficult for coordinated. Lots of obstructed shots, lots of things that get in your way. They're playing limited visibility. There's no way he's using coordinated bombardment. Screwtape77, faithful Stabcast Twitch follower, says 100% the archenemy is not playing that card. And then he flips it. And right then, you can hear Jim Ross of the WWE cry out, good God almighty. And the game, that's how the game started. So that takes us to our social media plug here tonight. If you can, take a look at our Twitch stream where you can watch that game and all the crazy things that happen. I'll take a look at SW Stabcast and Stabcast Tim's personal one, Timentation Irish, for some of our recent games we've been streaming. You can hear the force spirit of Jim Ross cry out, as God is my witness, he's broken in half.
He was broken.
It was a thing. It was a thing to watch, I'll be honest with you. And it just gets more interesting after that, folks. Go check out that video.
It's true.
Take a look at our Instagram, where I've posted photos of lists I've been thinking about. We've posted photos that they've taken that Tim mostly took at these recent events. Go look at the tables. The Dan Wolf tables looked great down there in Atlanta. We post list ideas, models, you know, that kind of stuff. Check us out on the Instagram, SW Stabcast.
And you see my co-podcasters here have failed in their duties and guarding the safety of the social media. And now have given me access to it. Yep. And so all hell has been unleashed. I'm sorry. But if you'd like to follow this hellscape, you can follow us at SW Stabcast on pretty much all the different social medias. Like Ben said, on Twitter, on Twitch, all that stuff, Facebook, rate us on iTunes, everywhere. SW Stabcast.
Also, there's another podcast out there. We just talked about Darth DePinto, or Joe DePinto, from out of the Chicago area. He has a Legion podcast that you guys should check out, the Legion Academy. So give that a Google. It's a good show. I dig it quite a bit. It's one of the few Legion podcasts I actually do listen to on the regular, with co-host Joe and then Sean from the Terrain Studio. Yeah, it's very confusing. But they're all good guys who I've gotten to meet and hang out with, so check out their podcast. But if you want to support our podcast, you can go to our Teespring shop and buy some t-shirts to help us cover our hosting costs to keep bringing you guys this mediocre podcast. Or send us a question, some feedback, whatever you want, whatever's on your mind, to swstabcast@gmail.com. You can find us on the Discord server. If you want to get a hold of us on there, be sure to tag us, because I think Tim's the only like super active one on there.
I just can't stand notifications, okay? I see notifications. I have to get rid of them. So it just bothers me.
I see them on the phone as I'm trying to teach class. It's like, what is Tim doing on
that's
Discord?
That's right. But the other thing I want you guys to send to our email box is send us some photos and some information about where you guys play. Today, we want to shout out the 918th Legion out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. They play at Top Deck Games. Their casual night is Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6:30. You can look up Eric Hoffman. He seems to be kind of their organizer, and they have an event coming up May 4th, which for when this podcast releases, that'll be this Saturday. Go support them if you're in the Oklahoma area. We'll be sure to have some photos up on our Instagram. I've talked with Eric a little bit, and he's a good guy. And if you're in the greater Tulsa area or anywhere around Oklahoma or whatever the Midwest, whatever that desolate wasteland is, you guys should go check them out.
Ryan does not know his geography. He's like, listen, if you're in North Texas, you drive up 35. It's a nice drive to go to Tulsa. There are good people out there mostly. So, you know, go see Oklahoma, see Top Deck Games, the 918th.
All right. So now all of the news for the week of Legion. Let's buckle in, boys. What kind of news do we have as of this recording that we will miss out on by the time that we actually release this?
Because FFG will release a Saturday afternoon article.
Yes.
That's right. That's how they work. You know they will. The Gungans are coming, Ben. Here they come.
So, yeah, we have no new news. We reported on everything that we know. Celebration's news was kind of geared towards all the other Star Wars games, since they gave us a bunch of stuff at Adepticon. So, in place of our news, Tim, what news article are we not going to see this week between now and when we post? What is going to be something that is not published?
We're going to see, hot off the digital presses, we're going to see, coming right from FFG Studio, nothing less than, I said it before, I'll say it again, the Ugnaughts.
Okay.
The Ugnaughts are going to come marching in.
The Ugnaught expansion. Yes. Awesome.
I'm convinced it's going to happen.
Ben, what article are we not going to see?
We are not going to see the Rebel Bothan spies.
Okay. Because they're all dead. Is that like the AT-ST down expansion? It's just like scattered terrain of bodies.
Is it just a graveyard? Is it graveyard area terrain?
Yes. Yes. Yes, it is. I really want Admiral Akbar on a piece of terrain surrounded by dead Bothans.
Can he have a little Moncal tear going on? Oh, it was a trap.
Do they cry? Do they have tears?
Well, that's racist.
No, do fish have tears? Do fish cry? Do fish... Like, do they excrete sand? I mean, like, we excrete water. So do they excrete, like, salt to dry up the water?
You can't just ask that. Do fish have tears? What kind of electric sheep bull is that?
But why do you need tears if you live underwater? That's all I'm saying.
But they still have emotions.
They don't have eyelids either. But
exactly.
Maybe their tears float. We don't know. It's Star Wars.
Space magic. So what you guys heard it here first. Mon Calamari's cry the Force. They just midichlorians come out of their face.
That's right. I want you to cut out all of that except for that blurb right there.
All right, moving on from things that are nonsense to other things that are also nonsense. It is time for our reoccurring segment, the Imperial Academy Graduate Officer School, or IAGOS, IAGOS? I don't know. We need to rename this segment, but that's okay. You've survived basic infantry school. You know how to aim, shoot, and grab objectives. But now you want to learn how to take your Legion to the next level. How to take your battlefield tactics to the officer level. So, what are we talking about this week? We're learning to play on the clock. A lot of times, tournaments can be really intimidating for players, knowing that they have to play with a time constraint, knowing that it's another level of play, another thing to worry about, that when you're just learning the game or just getting into the game can be really intimidating. So we want to talk about ways that you can start to learn to play on the clock and be more comfortable and actually use that clock a bit to your advantage.
I'll be real honest, like one of the reasons why I haven't gone back to Guild Ball is the time clock scares me. There's so much kind of going on in that game, and I'm too over tightly wound to not know what my opponent can do.
Sure.
I just can't do it fast enough. I'm like, chess clock, slap.
Yeah, there's been actually a lot of really interesting discussion around Legion, whether we need to use chess clocks or not. And that's kind of the resounding thing that I've heard, is that while it may be good in the long run for like the top tier players of the game who are really comfortable, it'll probably murder the competitive scene because it intimidates so many other people. And I respect that. The 2-hour clock as it is, how do you do it? How do you play with it? How can you prepare for it? First thing I think is really obvious is even in your casual practice games, play with a clock. I know for my friendly local game store, we always play with a clock because that clock is typically the game store is closing now. So we have a very natural clock. But if you're playing, maybe not in a game store, maybe at your kitchen table or your basement or wherever it is that you happen to play, and you might not have a hard time stop that says, hey, it's 8:45. We need 15 minutes to pack up and get out of the store. Set a clock so you know what a 2-hour round of Legion feels like. Now, you don't have to set that 2 hours and start it right as you guys start flipping over battle cards. But because sometimes tournament organizers will give you 15 minutes to do that before they start the 2-hour clock. But be mindful and practice with a clock on. But I think the biggest thing you can do to speed up your play is a lot of times when it's your turn, you need to think about everything that you possibly could do, even before you select even which order you want to flip. Or maybe you have an order token and you need to look at all the different units that you could activate with it. Put all of that out of your mind. You don't have to premeditate all of the possible moves. You just need to identify the most impactful ones that you can take. So instead of you've elected to use a core. So instead of looking at every place that core could go, every target that guy has, you just need to be able to get very good at a glance, looking at, okay, here are the probably the most effective 3 things that unit could do, even though it can do 15 different things. Here's the 3 most effective. Let me just measure against these 3 and premeditate and think about these 3. It'll keep your play a whole lot quicker and a whole lot snappier. Now, how do you get to figure out what those top 3 most helpful moves are? That's honestly just through play and practice. You'll start to build some muscle memory and, well, this type of action in this situation tends to lead to success, so let's just go ahead and do that.
Ideally, your army should have enough core in there that you're going to pull a core pretty often.
Right.
And so it needs to be, does a core unit have to go right now? Mm-hmm. If not, do I need to burn a turn by moving someone else who's not really going to be in the middle of something, just kind of a quick move because I'm fishing for a better token, maybe something I really need.
Yeah.
And I can save a trooper that's closer to the middle. So you kind of start prejudging this has to happen
exactly.
Now. That can wait.
So. Yeah, and even once you've selected which unit to move, just look at the handful of things that you think are going to be most effective and weigh mentally weigh those instead of everything it can do.
And that's something where I kind of, I think it still trips me up sometimes, because the way I play really most games, or I try to play most games, I don't know if I succeed, but I try to play more with that big picture in mind. And I think sometimes while that's great, and obviously you need to have a big picture in mind, I think I'll get so focused on the big picture that I'll stress out too much about the little smaller things. And then I freeze up. And then in that freezing, you get more anxious, and then you make a mistake. And then then your big plan ironically falls apart because of the little plans. And you need to realize that your big plan is a bunch of little plans just stacked on top of each other.
Right.
Like three dwarves in a big coat?
Yes.
Stop it. You stop that.
Three Ugnaughts. Come on. Three Ugnaughts.
Three Ugnaughts. That's right. It's going to happen, kids. Now, the other thing you got to remember, too, is, you know, you have to share this clock. Don't hog it all for yourself. You know, don't be slow playing. Slow playing is, in many places, it is documented, like, in the rules, for their respective rules, as full-on bad sportsmanship. So it's not just, hey, that's not fun. It's, hey, that's wrong. So practice good sportsmanship. Be aware of sharing your clock and be aware of your opponent's need. Especially be aware if maybe, you know what, maybe your opponent plays a little bit slower than you do. That's fine. Everybody's at a different level. Allow them to do that comfortably. And like, don't, if you're going to want to win, like, try and win, but don't win because you stole their time. That's not really a win. That's just a W next to your name.
Yeah, I think one way that's easy to do this is if you start to play and by the end of the first turn, you can usually tell who's the faster player if there is a disparity. And I think whoever is the slower player needs to try to play on pace with the faster player. That's not always the case. Because I played a game at Atlanta this weekend where I played quicker than my opponent. And it actually helped me if we ended the game sooner. But luckily we didn't. We got that next round going. But whoever the slower player is, if you're the slower player, maybe try to pick up your pace a little bit to not hog all that clock to yourself. And it just, because once again, it's two people trying to have fun together.
Yeah, definitely.
This is something we picked up from X-Wing, is being able to eyeball. Mm-hmm. And you can measure everything in Legion. That is something you're allowed to do. But if you don't have to, that saves you time. And so you should always play with time in mind. And I think part of that starts at turn zero. Yep. Yeah. If you build a list where you really need to rely on turn five and six to win you the game, you may not get there.
Yep.
Right. I mean, that's currently a conversation in the Legion meta. Is the timer long enough for us to get to six full rounds? And honestly, in the past five games that I've played between now and January, I don't think we've gotten to round six. I think time-wise, I've made it to round six maybe once since January.
I will say, sometimes that is not always the case. I did also, while we're talking about Atlanta from before, I played Adam, who ended up winning the whole thing, and he set a new record for me. He tabled me, complete and total table, by turn five in an hour.
Jeez. So you guys were playing quick. That's what I like to hear.
Well, he was, and I just was dying, so it's fine.
It's like turn one has lots of activations. You know you're going to have at least your eight or nine. Your opponent may have eight or nine or 10, or heaven forbid you're both playing up to 13.
Yeah.
You're going to have a lot of activations. Mm-hmm. So you need to move with a pretty quick speed.
Yep.
Because when it comes down to the brass tack and you need to do this thing here at the end and you need the time to contemplate, you're not going to have it if you wasted everything on turns one and two.
Now, Ben is also saying that a lot of times he can't quite get to those later rounds. And that's also because Ben is a very slow player. Don't let him fool you.
I am not. I normally get to round five. Round five is actually my norm.
And that's just rare that we see round five. Round five is about right.
Honestly.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah,
five is
that's fair.
Watching all the TTS games that I watch, it's mostly round fives I'm seeing.
Yep.
Yeah, it's mostly round five.
It's rare they're getting to six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that's going to help you play a whole lot faster is have a plan and stick to it. Know what you need to do. Have an idea on how your list is going to approach each and every battle card. Have an idea on what units you want going for your objectives. Have an idea about how you're going to deploy on each objective, because that'll save you a lot of time during setup. Know which units are your designated rapid reinforcements. Know where you want your mines to go. Have a plan. even before you pack your list, even as you're building your list, have an idea of what you want to happen. So when you go to sit down at a table, you're not wondering, well, which squad do I need to deploy in the corner of major offensive? Who's going to go after that middle box? Which are my babysitters for my vaporators? You've already got all this planned out. And then when the chaos of battle comes, you need to try your best to stick to that plan. Now, obviously, you need to have a little bit of flexibility to respond to what your opponent's going to do. But if you can lead your opponent, if you can make him play your game, not only is that going to help you play faster to give your opponent more time and to hopefully get your games longer and so you get more action, but if your opponent's responding to you and you've got the plan that you're putting into place, honestly, it's really going to help you because then you can send your brain power to deal with other things and not having to formulate your kind of macro strategy with your list. So always come with a plan for each and every battle card that's in your battle deck and also the ones that you had to cut if you don't expect to be blue player.
Right.
Yeah, not going to make this like NPR, but it's what a good jazz musician does. They know music. They know the basics. They know how everything works. They know how individual pieces. But it's the improvisation that both keeps them in time with the music, but also makes their plays look spectacular.
Well, I'll say too is when if you're at an event like Atlanta or sometimes on TTS, like for Invader League, we could see the maps ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Anywhere where you have a chance to see the maps, don't go over and study it, still interact with your fellow players. But if you know there's probably a chance you're probably going to be playing on that, or know your own weaknesses. Look at and find the map like, ooh, that map, I'm not going to know how to play it. Let me look at this for a second. And just look at and kind of, there's only so many deployments and things. So run it through your head of saying, okay, if I get disarray, well, that stinks, but I could go here, I can go here. Just run it through real quick and have a chance to mentally prep for that. And then, like they were saying, when the time comes, you'll have to be a little flexible, but at least you'll be practiced in your flexibility.
At Gen Con, we gathered around the tables and talked about it as a group.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was a lot of fun.
That's true. Yeah, it was great. It was a really good time. But the other thing you need to do, too, talking about the clock again, is asking for updates on it.
Yep.
Yeah, keep that's in huge. Mind that you want to always be aware of it. Don't let it intimidate you and scare you, but always be aware of it. I've had to do it a few times in the past in different places where, maybe the TO or whoever's in charge is really wrapped up in a game. And obviously I'm wrapped up in my game and they'll stop giving time alerts. And that's a problem. And I understand it. I'm not mad at them, but that's also on the player too. If you need to be aware of your own time as well. The TO can't be over your shoulder the whole time. So it's not wrong to set a timer for yourself. Nope. As long as it's synced up with the official timer, go for it. I think it's good practice.
Well, you don't have to be as hipstery as Tim, with your Apple Watch that's notifying you of the things and keeping your heart rate. You can go analog. I often do have a diver's watch that I'll set the dial. I'll know when we started the round. I can do the math real quick.
But Ben, did your diver's watch wake you up that morning?
Oh, it did not.
No, it did not.
No. The other thing to keep in mind, much like calling on a judge to make a call in your game, isn't an insult to your opponent. Asking the TO for the time is not you passive aggressively telling you your opponent they're slow. That's not it at all. It's for you to know how much time you have remaining so you can keep planning. I ask for the time if the tournament doesn't have like a clock on the wall or a TV displaying a countdown. Probably twice a turn once we get to turn two, I'm always asking just, hey, TO, how much time? How much time? I'm keeping that in my head because sometimes I can get lost in the moment and I don't always exactly know exactly how much time we have. But that can also impact your strategy. If you know that you're making a play for turn five, but it turns out you're only going to get four, well, then you need to adjust. And always knowing how much time you've got left on the clock is huge. So you're not insulting your opponent. And if you're getting offended that your opponent is asking for the time, just don't. They're not telling you you're slow. Maybe they are, but probably not. They're probably just trying to better make plans.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know I can hear you, brave listener. I don't want to run away. But if you're doing recover the supplies and you know you have exactly enough time to finish this
round.
Oh,
run. Run, son.
Then you run.
Run.
You run and you hide behind giant rocks.
That's how I won that game.
The objective is how we win this game.
Yeah.
And so sometimes that is the better part of valor.
Yeah.
I know you feel it in your hearts, but just sometimes you have to do that.
This is true.
Which is why I stand for pretty much every game I can.
Yes.
I've been doing that since X-Wing. Don't get me wrong, as you get older, as you get heavier, as you get lighter, your shoes are worse, it sometimes makes you hurt. But standing keeps me in the action.
Oh, yeah.
Keeps my eyes on the board. Yeah. Keeps me looking at what I need to be looking at. Standing means I don't pull my phone out and just kind of gaze at it. Yes. It keeps me focused on the game.
Yes.
Now, sometimes you have to step away. You got to use the restroom as a thing that happens, but you should ask your opponent because you don't want to make it seem like you're wasting their time by walking away. And you can always ask the TO to have some extra time. If something comes up and you really do need to step away from the table, talk to your opponent. Yeah. Talk to the TO.
Oh, yeah.
It's sometimes acceptable.
In a timed tournament game, the most frustrating thing I've ever seen happen was my opponent was on his phone. We were having a good game. We were having a fun time, but he was on his phone doing something. I tell him how many dice to roll in defense in regards to what I was doing, and he does it still with his phone in his hand. And then I end my activation. I say, all right, to you. And then he puts down his phone and starts thinking about what he wants to do. And because he was so wrapped up with what was on his screen, he didn't know what his next step was. And that was really frustrating.
And then I shouted from two tables down, Tim, stop taking those selfies. Get off the internet.
Now, I will say, I'm gonna interject here. The phone is a big element. And as someone who is very, very tech-oriented and I'm always pretty much always on my phone and everything like that, and I'm normally very pro-phone in most things in life. However, this past tournament was, I think, the first tournament where I consciously put my phone on do not disturb and didn't look at it for the entire game of every game I was playing, except for in between the games.
And where'd you finish?
I was just going to say, and I came in third. Yeah. And that's, I'm just saying, because I had nothing else on my mind. I had zero. I didn't. And again, it's important. Put it on do not disturb, not just vibrate, because you'll feel it vibrate and it'll distract mm-hmm. you. Just
by the way,
eliminate
how did we
it.
Get this far into the podcast, and this is the first time you've mentioned that you placed yeah. third in a tournament, Tim?
Do you feel the chill, Ben? Do you feel the chill?
I did, because when he texted me, because I obviously wasn't there, I was at the house, I was like, I'm sorry, excuse me?
Yeah. It's what? A cold day in hell when Tim finishes above me in an event.
Tim yes. got victory pie?
Yes.
He got victory pie?
Well, also, I told Ryan, actually, when I was announced that I was third, I looked over at Ryan and I might have mouthed some expletives of like, I don't know what to do. How do I handle
I think that
this?
Was when you were 2-0 going into the final
yeah,
round.
Yeah, that was. I was 2-0 and I said, help. I'm panicking. I'm used to being on the bottom, like joking around, not caring. And now I'm in line for winning and I don't know what to do. Fortunately, I lost that next game. Thanks, Adam.
Yeah,
I
you threw that next game real yeah, hard. So
I got
fine.
To go home. No, I didn't throw it, but my dice threw it, and that's okay. And I got to go home. I was happy with that. I'm not mad at all.
But going back to that cell phone, I know, yes. I get it. It's the world in which we live in. I love taking photos of the board.
Yeah.
But you'll see where I forget because I need to keep time mm-hmm. in mind.
Yes.
Like if I've got the extra time, if you and my opponent and I, we're moving along, we've got yes. a good pace, I can sometimes snap a photo here or there.
Right.
Or if the dice are especially juicy, I like to snap a photo.
Right.
But when time's on the line, that yeah. phone stays in my pocket.
Well, I will say, I did take a couple pictures at Atlanta during a game, but that's different. I didn't look at anything else. I literally just took it out, used the camera, put it back. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes it.
I will say,
difference.
One of the reasons why at our previous tournaments, if we have an odd number, I don't mind taking the bye, is so that I can walk around and
sure.
take photos and
sure.
have that interaction.
Oh, yeah.
Because it gives me the time there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, time is so important to this game, mm-hmm. especially in a tournament setting. If you're going to play for yourselves, sure, knock yourself out. Go have your campaign, go spend 6 hours on your six rounds. You can do that. But when playing, casual, I would definitely keep it on the timer. It helps yeah. helps keep good gameplay.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Nothing worse than a game that drags on forever.
The biggest board game sin is being boring, and you never want your game mm-hmm. to slow down to where it's boring.
That's true.
So now let's go back behind the scenes to our Imperial Corner, where I hear a new vehicle rumbling into the game. Let's take a look at the TX-225 Gav W Occupier.
The Texas Gav Occupier.
It's as big as Texas, I'll be honest
That's
with you.
Right.
It is. It's like
the Texas.
So what are you feeling, Tim? Is it sending that message to your enemy?
I'm feeling the rumbles of victory is what I'm feeling. Actually, funnily enough, one of the first games I played with it, it was a little glitched underneath it, and so it wasn't shaking to where it was game altering, but it could rumble a little bit, and so it was just shaking enough. So my opponent and I both loved it. I forget who I was playing, but yeah, we both like ate it up, and he even told me after I moved it, he said, "Put your card underneath it, see if you can make it rumble again." So it's like okay, but so yeah, I've gotten to play it a few times. I am 2-2 with it. In those four games, I've learned a lot. And again, it's only four, but still, that's enough hours to learn lots of things. I've played it a good amount. I'm, like I said, I'm 2-2. Interestingly enough, I will say I use it with an interesting list that has evidently, I guess, kind of become my list. Like, someone was giving me credit for it the other day.
Nice.
And I was like, oh my God. Okay.
Hashtag Legion famous.
Yeah.
It is so cold. I mean, you got third in a tournament, and now you're internet famous for creating a list.
We're not saying that it's good. All I'm saying, it's a tank double bounty list. So it's expensive.
Mephistopheles, if you need a blanket, you let me know. We can ship you some boxes, right?
Yeah. So it is an expensive list, and I'm sure other people have built it before, but I've just been playing it a lot, so I think it's been, and streaming it a lot, so I think it's gotten a lot of visibility. Its ability to throw so much pain at such a distance can be really key, the tank. I treat it a lot like a super E-Web, where I find a good alley or choke point and put it there, and again, it's shooting range 4 with 2 guns, lots of cool things going on, I like it. I use a surge pilot with it. So I think when you have the surge pilot, I prefer actually rolling with the 3 white and 2 red pilot because it's more dice. It's more chances for paint, more chances for hits.
That's fair.
So you're rolling 3 reds, 2 blacks, and 3 whites. That's pretty good with surging to hits. So it's pretty strong. Obviously, I've not won all my games with it. I know a lot of people are playing it as a transport, and I will confess, in all my games I've played, I have never used the transport option.
Snow throwers.
Oh yeah, and totally, it totally is a great snow thrower. I have no arguments against that. I'm not saying that's the wrong way to play it. I'm just saying my way that I like to play it is I like to sit it in the back and use it as artillery almost. But the great thing about it is it's so long, even though it only goes speed 1, it can move so well.
It's the exact same speed as the ATST.
Yeah. And that free pivot is also crucial. But we'll talk a little more about that in a sec.
So, Ryan, are you picking up what the Imperials are putting down? Are you scared to be a Rebel player now?
Well, never. Because we're always afraid. And like I said, sometimes the white dice just bail us out. But I actually have not had a chance to play against the tank. Tim gets to play a lot more in TTS than I do. So now that it's just recently been released, I haven't gotten to see it on an actual table. I'm sure I'll get lots of practice in the future. I'm just excited with it as a platform, as a model, because I think there's going to be a lot of fun counterplay to it. It's going to introduce a new line of thinking that I have to always, as a Rebel player, someone playing against it, be aware of. And I like that you can outfit it so many different ways. You can play it as that artillery piece. You can play it as a transport piece. You can do a lot of different things with it. And each way means your opponent has to respond appropriately. And that's fun. Yeah. I think point for point, this thing is absolute value town. It's point values over its counterpart, the X-34 for the Rebels. It's so much cheaper for what you get.
Yeah.
Its ability to transport a whole squad, its various weapons options, how cheap those weapons are compared to the X-34. I think it's going to be a staple of Imperial play very, very, very soon.
Yeah. There's just so many things you can do with it.
Yeah.
There's just so many different ways. Even if you put nothing on it, it still hits like a truck, especially if you get within range of that second gun that's built into it.
Speaking of the X-34, which I can just hear the rip down in the Rebel caves.
The backfire.
Ryan, you put it on the table. I saw it. How's it treating you?
All right. I've gotten to play probably 4 or 5 games with it since I got a copy early at Adepticon. I've not had a ton of success with it. I've won several games with it, but it was kind of despite it. Like, my opponent spent some time shooting at it and blowing it up before it really did anything, so that bought me some time, I guess. But I don't feel like it's been worth its investment. But it does have this cool element to it, where it is super fun to play. I might not be winning with it, or it may not be the best thing since sliced bread, but man, is it fun to fly.
You're talking like me now.
I know, and to run up and throw all these dice and then scoot away. I think Ryder Azadi introduces like some new cerebralness to the game, where you can have so many different options about when you want to use him and how. I think the key to it is to keep it cheap, to keep it like under 130 points, closer to 120 if you can. Don't fully load it. I think you could run it with the rocket gunner or a front mounted gun, but probably not both. I think you go ahead and staple the 9.2 white dice just to the card, and you just either want to run it where you're shooting somebody in the front at all times, or you put the rocket guy in the back and you just try to manage your range, and that way you don't have to worry about firing arc. I think the new pilot that comes in, it is both really good in it and the airspeeder, but I think it hits a big snag. I think it's really good in Rebel versus Rebel, and I don't think it's that great in Rebel versus Imperial. Until the DLT trends down, which isn't going to happen because just the units that I thought were going to help push the DLT a little bit out of the meta by just driving their price up with like Death Troopers and now the tank, they just also come with DLT versions. I think until the DLT kind of starts to go away in favor of some other things, I think it's really hard pressed to work well in Rebel versus Imperial. And so for a tournament, I'm not so sold on it, but if I know I'm going to be playing a Rebel versus Rebel matchup, I think it can be a lot of fun, especially paired with like a Flamer AT-RT. But I do think it opens up some interesting play. I think it opens up some interesting play with Rebel single commander lists because it is so expensive. It kind of is the cost of a Han or a Leia that you need to start running it with single commander. And then running it and maybe an AT-RT and getting some extra suppression removal that you'll be missing from another commander with Pinned Down. That's the Imperial version, Turn the Tide. I think a well-played Turn the Tide turn can be absolutely huge. As for, like Tim was saying, transport, I actually have used transport quite a bit. It's nearly killed Leia. It's nearly killed Jyn. But
she was so disfigured by that fire. I mean, you didn't recognize Leia when it was done. She looked like Vader before you put her in the suit. She was on fire.
But this thing is a 100% perfect Chewbacca delivery system.
Yeah.
Like they shoot it as Chewie charges forward. Like I don't imagine Chewie fits inside of it. So he's like hanging on the edge and getting ready just to get enraged and leap out and club somebody to death. It's a great Chewie delivery system, and it's like I said, man, it is an absolute, absolute, absolute ton of fun to play.
Grubhub, did you order a Chewbacca? No.
That enrages him, which then makes him angry and then just makes him kill things.
Yep. So. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Tim, are you feeling the burn the Landspeeder's trying to bring to you?
Well, honestly, I think a lot of people poo-pooed it a little bit when we first got announced, myself included. I wasn't super impressed with it. But I think it can have a really good presence on the field. It might not be the toughest thing, but it definitely makes me pause. And I got to think about how am I going to deal with it, especially if it's doing what Ryan's doing and it's got Chewbacca on board. I have to think, do I even want to shoot this? Like, maybe I don't. But again, it's got good weapons on it, decent weapons at least. And again, it makes me think. It's not something that I can just write off and say, oh, he's got that. Whatever, who cares? I really have to think about, Oh, that's going to hit that flank pretty hard if I don't watch it. Okay, I better watch it out.
So we've been doing nothing but singing the praises, but I think for our unaligned systems, we've got to look at his weaknesses. In case you come up on that Imperial on Imperial or that Rebel on Rebel training exercise, how do we blow up your vehicle fast? So Tim, how do I take the tank down?
I mean, obviously the big gaping part would be those side spots. Side spots are huge.
They're enormous.
Misplay it, yeah. If you misplay it, I think it's really going to be that downfall is having those side spots open. But that's another part of the reason why I play it the way I play it. Because if I don't move or if I barely move, I don't have to expose my sides as much. And again, it goes back to, and I mentioned this before, it really goes back to using your pivots to their full advantage. And I think especially as Imperials, at least for me, at least maybe as an Imperial person than I am, I get really wrapped up in being so offensive and going after the attack and just pressing. And so I'll be thinking of, okay, how do I use my pivot to attack better? But you got to be thinking about, okay, but does this pivot leave me open on my side? So yeah, I get a good shot off, but is it going to cost me my tank? It's better to play the patient game with it. But again, it's going to come down to being able to play it better. But really, those sides are huge. Such a huge thing.
I mean, I love the idea of almost side crawling with that.
Yeah.
Taking the hard 90-degree right-hand turn, pivoting, back. So you're still facing the target, but you've moved not quite as far up.
Yeah.
But sideways.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it puts a hard piece of cover or a wall on your right hand side, less likely to get shot at.
Well,
or...
and the good news is it does have armor, so that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, that helps a lot. And it has armor and a red die.
It's just crazy good.
Well, crazy good. It is. It is, unless you roll 3 for 12 saves and you lose it like turn 3, turn 2. And it just melts.
Which you can find on our Twitch stream.
Yeah.
Take a look at
it. Oh, God. It was bad. So traditionally, it's good.
This is the part of the show where Tim brings emotions into math and tells you that math is wrong because it makes him feel bad.
Math is not bad. Math is just bad for me. Okay.
It's why you're not a statistician.
That's right.
That's right.
The way you bring down the X-34 is quite different than the way you bring down the grav tank. You just shoot it with lots of dice. You don't need quality of dice. You just need quantity of dice. Since its armor is limited, since its cover is limited, it is a little bit easier to get cover from terrain with, but...
it is really low to the ground.
Yeah. Like
there's not a whole huge profile on that thing.
You need to just burn it down with a whole bunch of dice. Impact is great against it, but you don't need it. It's not a necessity. Just throw a set of fleet troopers, throw some pathfinders, some death troopers at range 2 at it, and this thing will blow up. It's only 6 wounds with a white surging defense dice, and it gets pretty expensive if you give it cover 2. And even with cover 2, it gets to ignore 4 hits, but no crits. And if you throw enough dice, you'll get enough crits. So just throw lots and lots of dice at it, and it'll break pretty quick.
Yeah.
So you mentioned playing with your ATRTs with your repair bots. How well is that going to work on the X-34?
I think with both of these options, repair bots are going to be absolutely key. I didn't get to use my repair bots a whole lot because of just the situations and when things activated. And it was my first time kind of outrunning with them, and I played them all kinds of wrong. But I think for you're going to have to use some like hit and run tactics and have squads running behind your X-34 and using cohesion to try to keep it close. Keeping both of these things alive with 8 or 9 point robots that give you 2 hit points on armored vehicles is going to be absolutely, absolutely huge. And I think especially for the Rebel players, it's going to really make those 120, 130 point speeders are going to really need them to get their points back. You're going to need to fly into the enemy, get a shot off, come back, and heal a damage off of it before it just gets absolutely obliterated.
So in the game that Tim and I streamed, I was watching Dart the Pinto. In his list, literally, there were med bots as far as the eye could see.
Yep.
There was emergency stims on all of the saboteurs. And I poo-pooed the list. I was like, what? It was like 150 points worth of heal saves. I mean, it wasn't quite that much, but it was high. It was more than 100. I was like, is that going to be worth it? Go watch that game and watch how he plays it. He made it worth it.
That's true. Awesome.
There were so many units sitting on the table at the end of the game because he just kept bringing them back. And they kept track of it. I mean, it's not like he was doing it illegally. He used every one of
them. That's awesome.
It was amazing to watch.
It was true. It was, and it, even as commentators, we got caught off guard a couple times. We're like, hey, this didn't happen. And, you know, I think we had a judge watching or something. And they chimed in and said something. And they said, nope. Like, no, it did. And they just healed him. Or that healed that. Or that person healed that. And it was so much healing that we lost track of the healing.
That's funny.
Yeah. It was good.
Like, because we thought for sure there should have been some more dead units. Yeah. And it just weren't. So I'm thinking with these strategies to kill your vehicles, when I finally get that Gungan Battle EOP, we're going to need some unorthodox strategies.
Stop
like
it.
A melee Tiger Trap or Robert the Bruce Spike Pits.
Stop it. When the word Gungans come, it's time for us to go. It's been a good solid length episode. So I want to thank you guys for spending your commute, your evening, your morning, your paint time, whatever it is that you listen to us, for hanging out with us. I want you guys to go check out World Worlds with Dan Wolf Games, where we're going to be producing some more content soon. I want you to check out our Twitch channel, all that good stuff. And until next time, I'm Ryan Slowoski, reminding you to watch the clock.
And I'm Tim Hannon, reminding you to pray for Ugnaughts, but prepare for Gungans.
And I'm Ben Fowler, reminding you to visualize every game. It's just as good as playing
it. It's not.
It's not. That's not. Not. That's,
good
that's
night, everybody.
Good night.
Have a good night, folks. We'll be right back. been having strategically plan where to pull you guys off, because we've gotten pretty good at this to where I've had to dig for bloopers.
No, that's fair.
So
that was a nice place for that. Well, movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a good producer. What can I say?